briefing, on all the essential Dhamma. Okay, we will have a very simple salutation, then we will start.
Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā Buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādemi Svākāto bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi Supatipanno bhagavato sāvakasāṅgho saṅghaṃ namāmi
Okay, you can be seated. We will continue with the sharing. I think as far as all this essential Dhamma is concerned, we have covered most of that. Then the rest will be covered as we go through the Heart Sutta notes. Okay, turn to page 28, 3.2. This essential Dhamma is very useful. The Buddha taught under one of the sutta, if I'm not wrong, it's Nipata Sutta. He teach the monks how to overcome unwholesome thought or negative thought that has arisen. This one, there are five ways involved. The first two ways are thought-based. So I will share with you, then you can make use of this. Under the four right efforts, you remember the four right efforts within the Noble Eightfold Path? What are the four right efforts? Okay, the four support for meditation earlier on, I didn't finish. Relax, aware. Number three is you have to try to develop it for as long as you can, for 24 hours. Then the fourth one is trust. Means trust your nature to do. Don't interfere using your thought. Then the four right efforts that the Buddha taught are very useful. Four right effort. These are thought-based meditation. It's more of developing the contemplative understanding and wisdom to overcome them. So the first right effort is what? First right effort is to, the key word is what? First right effort is to abandon. I write in red. This one is abandon. The unwholesome thought that has arisen. So this unwholesome thought can be any wrong thought that has a reason. So this is the first right effort. Second right effort. Yes. You must arise the right effort to the next emphasis is prevent. Prevent the unwholesome thought from arising. These two right efforts are the most important because they deal with all the unwholesome thought, wrong thought. All this unwholesome thought and wrong thought, they have the three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. That's why they will give you problem. So the Buddha said you have to arise the right effort to abandon it. So under the teaching, Nipata Sutta, the Buddha recommended five ways to overcome unwholesome thought. The first two is thought-based. He said when you are aware that the unwholesome thought has arisen, what must you do? What must you do? You must reflect, isn't it? Because you're aware, this is unwholesome, with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. It will make you evil. It will cause your karmic negativity to bring about downfall and problems for you when you go through life. So what have you got to do? You have to arise the right effort to abandon it. How can you abandon the anger that has arisen? Or the selfishness? Or the fear, the worry, the anxiety that has arisen. How can you abandon it when you have a situation in life, problem? How can you abandon it? Very easy to say. The right effort to abandon the unwholesome thought that has arisen. But how you do it? What did the Buddha recommend? Read the book. It's in the book. First way is what? Think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. So let's say you got anger. What is the direct opposite wholesome thought? Metta or loving kindness. So when you start to radiate love and metta, you will have a lot of metta energy there. Then how can you get angry? You can only do one thing at a time. Either you are angry, then there is no metta. But when there is metta, there is love. Anger cannot arise. But this way is of not much help, isn't it? Every time I get angry, she know. Every time I get angry, go and do metta. Where got such thing? Understand? You have to fix your problem. You have to act. You have to overcome it. You don't go and suppress. So what have you got to do is, the Buddha said, think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. So this one is not so practical. It can help you. Initially you got no choice, but there's no other way. You better go and do it. Then maybe you go to a quiet place, then radiate metta. After come out, okay. Then see the guy again, get angry. Do metta. It will solve your problem. Because you don't have the wisdom to inquire, why do you always get angry? Every time you see him, you get angry. So when you trace the origination factor, you realize it's due to your wrong view, your perception of him. You perceive him with negativity. Then when you have like selfishness, what is the opposite wholesome thought? Of course, very easy. You are selfish, you must think of dana, generosity. But who in that state of selfishness will go and think of generosity? Understand? When he is deluded, they always use this word. What is mine is mine. What is yours is also mine. The husband and the wife always like that. We all married already. Don't care so much. What is yours is mine. What is mine is mine. So both also he wants. He never say, what is mine is ours. What is yours is also ours. That's not so bad. But there are a lot of cases when you think of the direct wholesome thought, it may not work so well. If you are a generous person, then you will not be selfish, you will not be greedy. That's it. But if you are selfish and greedy, ask you to think of the wholesome thought of generosity, yeah, you know what you will do. Your thought will tell you, why should I give? He's so lazy, I don't want to work. Then he tell the spouse, hey, my money, you know, you don't simply spend. So all this is because of selfishness. So you think of direct opposite thought, not much use. So the Buddha knew, he said, then he said there is a second way. Yeah. What is the second way? Read. Read. Just read it out. Yes, that is very good. Thank you. Next time you use the mic so that I don't have to repeat all this. Come, come. This time I read out for you. Yeah. Is it on already? Okay. So the second way is like the Buddha said, you have to think of the consequence of holding on to this unwholesome thought or evil thought. If you do not abandon it, then the evil roots, which are the roots of all evil, will condition you into to become an evil person. For example, anger can condition you into hatred and violence. An angry person can kill, harm, and abuse others. So the question is that what you want? Because your life, it will bring about downfall, karmic negativity. If you kill and harm through anger, in future, when there is condition, people will kill you, harm you. Also could be through anger or delusion or revenge or whatever. So this is the second way. You have to reflect and contemplate and think of the consequence of having the anger. It's not only a three evil root make you evil. The Buddha says so strongly, the three poison. When you eat poison, what happened to you? You will die. Eh? But you tell me, but till the angry guy didn't die. When the Buddha says he will die, means spiritually you are dead. Understand? You don't have the spiritual understanding. That's why spiritually you are dead. You have problem. So this second way is more effective. When you contemplate, how can I have selfishness, violence, anger, fear, worry, anxiety? But this not only will not solve my problem, this will create more karmic negativity for me. So the consequence of holding on to this wrong thought, negative thought, evil thought, and unwholesome thought is so severe. When you understand the law of karma, then what do? You determine to abandon it. Correct or not? That's why this second way is very effective. Because it is serious matter, you know. Your life depends on it, you know. You somehow don't want to abandon it. So the best way to abandon it is what? Forgive and forget. Accept him for what he is and forgive him. Then there is no more anger, no more hatred. You root it out. When you forgive somebody, you free yourself. Always remember. Then when you think of the consequence or danger of having selfishness, craving, desire, to cheat, to deceive, and do all those things. You are karma-wise. In future, you will be cheated, deceived. Then how do you feel? Do you want to go through that type of experience? People kidnap you. People abuse you, violently harm you, hurt you, cheat you, deceive you, play you out. If that is not what you want, better wake up. Then make sure you follow this nature's law of karma. You reap what you sow. So you can never allow this evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion to take effect. Otherwise, it will condition karmic friction in the future. And your former mind will suffer. So with this in mind, you will naturally cultivate the opposite. Understand? The opposite, they call it ennobler or precept. And not only don't kill and don't harm. What are the ennoblers of this precept? Eh? You haven't heard of ennobler. To make yourself more noble than just keeping precept. Keeping precept means you undertake the training rule not to kill and not to harm. The ennobler is what? How can you make yourself more noble? You not only don't kill and don't harm, you become more loving and compassionate. Understand not? Then the second precept is, you undertake the training rule not to steal or take things that don't belong to you. What is the ennobler? Huh? You must cultivate more generosity. So when you cultivate when you cultivate generosity, you have this virtue in you, then the greed will the greed will slowly fade away. Understand? When you are more and more generous. Is it not enough ventilation or I don't know. Never mind. Don't worry. Ah, open the window a bit. Yeah. Open, open. No, no, no. Ah, yes. No, every time when I got not enough ventilation, this one starts to do that. Then just now I took bath. Then it was wet. Then I came in, I sneezed really. Never mind. Don't worry. This is normal, natural. I got two choices. Endure, understand, continue. Otherwise, react to it, miserable. That is, I want things my way. Cannot. So this is part of the reality of the form. Maybe I want you to understand. This body of ours is of the nature though. Get sick. and be diseased. You don't take care. Okay, it's okay, it's okay. Enough already. Thank you. Where was I just now? yes, the ennobler. Very good, thank you. So, when you cultivate the ennobler, you develop dana parami, generosity. As you develop more and more understanding of generosity, you will start to see the nature's law happening. I got one brother. Initially, he don't understand Dhamma. He's very naughty. He's the youngest in the family because he was too far behind. So my father, the last son, pampered him a lot. Until 20 years old, still washing clothes for him, washing shoes for him. And he don't have to worry. Then one day, my mother called me and my dad also discussed with me. He said, they are already so happy with life. The only concern is, after they die, this younger son, they don't know what to do with him. Then my mother used to tell me, he said, if he can change to be like any of you, and he even tell you, you can be 10% like your second eldest brother, my mom will be the happiest mom in the world. Then when I heard that, because they were in Alastair, so I call him up. Then I tell my dad, I say, I have spoken to him, ask him to wait for me this Chinese New Year when I go back, then I will talk to him. So the story was a bit long, but I cut it short. So I went back, I just tell him very simple thing. I don't teach him Dhamma, but he cannot understand. He, until Form 3 only. After that, he didn't continue his education. So what happened was, when I went back, I just talked to him in very simple terms. I said, come. We need to talk. Then he, as usual, very reluctant because he's scared I, like other brothers, scold him and say, you are useless. I never. I respect him for what he is. Then I call him, I say, come. Then he reluctantly came near me and he asked me, anything? I said, nothing. I came because dad and mom got a problem. They call me and they tell me this. Then I asked him back, what do you think? You know what he said? No need to worry about me. I'm so big, you worry for what? Understand the answer. I say, you really don't have love for your parents. They give you life. They sacrifice so much for you. They did so much for you. They provide for your food and shelter. Even until now, at this age, that still wash your clothes and shoe. You don't even have any gratitude. You just say, "Ah, yeah, no need to worry for me." What type of human being are you? I tell him. Then he looked at me. He was very curious. He never heard me spoke like that before. Then I told him, the least you can do is to have gratitude towards them. You can really fulfill in whatever manner what they want you to be. If I were you, I would do it. Yeah. Then the other thing I want him is, I say, it's very easy to choose. Black and white also you cannot see. I say, you must be blind. I say, although you have eye. Then he looked at me. I say, you want to understand or not? Yeah, he said, I want to understand. I say, do you think father can live very long? At that time, my dad was already 60. And he passed away at the age of 80. So I told him, what happened if dad is no more? Who will care for you? Who will wash your clothes? Wash your shoe? Well, then he starts to panic. He said, I never thought of that. I thought dad loved me so much, will be there for me. Then I say, mom also may not be around. So what do you want to do? Then I say, why not this Chinese New Year? Eh? We are the next day Chinese New Year. I say, every year, such a man, you come back, reunion, eat, never talk to anybody, take the ang pao, disappear. He will go and gamble. Then he will go and do all the funny things. He can, in a small town where you eat this either char kway teow or whatever, or Hokkien mee or what, he can go and call you until 10 ringgit. He is this type of person, because it's not his money. And last night, one bowl is at that time is only $1 or $1.50. Then after he heard that, he asked me, what can I do? He said, you all look down upon me. He said, got no reason for me to stay back. Every time I stay back, everybody look down upon me. So I might as well don't stay around. Then I asked him one simple question. Who say everybody look down upon you? I say, it's your own inferior complex. Because you live life like that. Then you created that misunderstanding. Your own thought tell you that. That's why you avoid everybody. I say, we are your brothers. Some of them are your sister. We are here for you. Why can't you just choose wisely? We are your life. Nothing to do with us, but because you are related, got affinity. That's why I talk to you. I say. Then I told him, very simple. If you want to change, we can help you. Anytime. Wow. His face suddenly brightened. Sure. I said, how? I say, very simple. I can give you three options. First option, you go and work for our eldest brother. He got a factory, manufacturing. Start from rank and file, come out. Second option is, dad got a medical shop, now under the charge of another brother. You go and help him. Yeah. Third, if you don't like them, don't like to work under them, also got another option. We will spend about 10,000 ringgit to rent a place for you, because in Alastair it's very cheap. About 1,200 to 1,500, you can get a shop front, shop line. Then I say, we will get you the whatever, sundry thing or whatever, or newspaper, or thing that you want to sell. Then you commit yourself to look after the business, the small business. We will send people to help you and teach you how to organize things. And the other brother can help you to order all these things. Then you can have your own business, become your own boss. Wow, he looked at me. He said, like that can. Then I say, okay, don't have to answer me now. Tomorrow, have a good sleep tonight. Tomorrow, let me know. Oh, tomorrow, early morning, he wake up. He never wake up so early. He straight away came and see me. He said, I choose the first one. Work for elder's brother. Then he went there. And he changed. After that, he remembered what I told him. Because you are my brother. I said, remember, if you have money, you are willing to change, you come and see me. I will help you to invest and make money. He straight away go and tell my father. He said, second brother told me this. Then my father, you know, very smart one. He straight away give me a call. He said, your youngest brother got money already. I said, how come he just started work? Okay, yeah, man. He said, I lend him 10,000. Then I was gone now. Then my father told me, he said, I also put in 10,000. You don't worry. He 10, I 10, 20. But the money never come. My mother, my father, call already instruction. Then I will have to do the investment. And he didn't send the money, it was because I never tell him you need to send the money. Because the stock I bought from him was public bank. And the public bank went up so many fold. And they make so much money. That's how it started. Then he remembered what I told him. You must learn how to donate. Because he is Chinese educator, I cannot teach him Dhamma. I say you go Ciji. Then he went. Oh, then later he changed. He really changed. Then he go and learn a lot of things. Then he asked me, he said, I remember you told me you must have charity, dana parami. That's why we talk about dana parami. He said, the more you give, the more you receive. Is it true? I said, definitely it's true. Okay, I donate, he said. We have the profit there already. He straight away tell me he donate 2,000 more. And I tell you, you won't believe. After he donate the 2,000, money come to him now. From various sources. Then he called me up again. Wow, very true. He said, donate some more. He said. As I keep on throughout the year, he was donating. My wife, no. That's how he came up. Then after that, among all my brother and sister, 9 of us, he is the second richest, end up. People write him off already. My elder brother and all the other brother was so surprised. He can make it until then. And he became very, very hardworking and full of faith. He no longer go the what they call the gangster way. Last time, he got a very special comb at the back here. Then his hair very funny. Then he like in the school extort students money. He extort student money. Then they form gang and go and extort money and do all the funny thing. Such a guy can just overnight change. It's because of simple understanding. Not Dhamma, no. Simple understanding that he can understand. So Dana Parami, you don't undervalue. When you give, actually you give to your nature. And a lot of things go your way. And the good thing about Dana Parami is you will not lose your wealth. Because this Dana Parami will protect you, will prevent condition of this from happening. Yeah, when you give, you will have condition to receive. So whatever you have, you will not lose it unless it's coming from the past. That one you can change. But from then on, you will be different. So the Dana Parami will allow you to do away with your selfishness. That's how you can root out the unwholesome thought. Then you can attend to it until it becomes less and less. But both of these are still thought-based. Not so effective. So the third way is what? Now our sister must come forward to the mic and read. Her voice is very good. Her voice is very clear, very loud. Sadhu. What is the third way? This one is the meditative way. This one, if you learn and apply, you progress very fast.
The third way. Relax and aware by just let things be. This is the meditative way by understanding that the natural state of mind before it's stirring is already in the meditative state of inner peace, calmness and silent inner awareness, and the flowering of thought is the very ending of that thought.
Sadhu. You understand? Can you understand that third way? This is meditation. That's why don't fight the hindrance. Don't worry about the heedless thinking, all those thoughts. Whatever arises, accept it, let it be. Just silent, aware. That is what meditation is all about. So this one, during the Buddha's time, he has an analogy. If I'm not wrong, he told Ananda one day, he said, can you get me some water? So during that time, there is no tap water. They have to go to the stream or somewhere where they can find water. So Ananda went to that stream. I think it's not a stream, it's a pool of water. Then every time he go there, he wants to collect. There is this, they call blockade and other things. Every time they cross, the water become murky because it disturbs and the sediment all come up. It's just like you see in the olden day in the village, the laterite road. After rain, the top layer of the water very clear. But when somebody walk over it or what, then the sediment will flow out. Then Ananda came back and told the Buddha, he said, the water are not healthy. It's very murky, so I cannot take it for you. Then the Buddha said, it's okay. But after don't know how long, he asked Ananda to go again. Then Ananda again find the situation the same. And then middle of the night, he told Ananda, you go. Hey, Ananda said, now, no more of this disturbance. Then he saw the water clear. He collect back and pass it to the Buddha. The Buddha instructed him, do you learn anything or not from collecting water? You go and try. So the Buddha actually taught him this. He said, do you realize the third time when you go there, the water is clear? Your mind is the same. If you don't stir, don't react, don't create movement or agitation, the natural state is clarity, stillness. You understand? That's how you meditate. Don't do anything. Don't react, don't stir the mind. Due to your wrong view, you react, you stir, your craving, your desire, your attachment, your memory. This is how your wrong thought come about, because these are your habitual tendency, your conditioning. So when you understand, you just relax, aware, silent. Then the very flowering of that thought is the very ending of that thought. That's why the thought will disappear. Because these are dependent originating thought. Without thought energy, without your delusion to stir it, your reaction of mind, there is no more movement. They will all slow down and dissipate. That's why I say, accept them for what they are. Don't go and create the own negativity of thought, means reaction to pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. Then it becomes mental hindrance. When it becomes mental hindrance, it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. That's why you cannot meditate. So the third way is very simple. Every time got anger, silent. Relax. Then you will see the anger dissipating. And I can tell you, when you have fear, do the same thing. Go and meditate and find out. The first time you realize that, I tell you, there is a lot of understanding and joy. Because when I went through that 20 over years ago, when I saw this anger, emotion, fear, or whatever arise, I want to understand. I just relax, silent. Then within a few seconds, straight away, I can see it dissipating, less and less. Then after a minute or two, suddenly still, nothing inside there. Then I realize, hey, this is meditation. I just aware, no need to do anything. And everything is gone. Then the mind is so different, so still, so quiet, so peaceful. Where there's nothing to stir. Then I realize this is due to wrong view. Last time it stirred. So immediately I reflected, contemplated, I straightened my view. Then in future, when I see that person or hear that thing or thought recall, there is no more of this movement because it has understood, awakened. Maybe you can say, but Theo, your past is different, we all different. You listen to this thought again, you die. I was no different from you when I started. The Buddha also was a Putujana before he started. How come he can make it? It's not that you are different, but you don't have faith in yourself, in your own nature. You are beautiful within. Because of delusion, you fail to realize what your true potential is, what your true nature is. So meditation is to have faith and confidence in your own self, to be sincere, to persevere, then you will find the Dhamma. You will awaken to the truth. So the third way, if you were to look at it deeper, what do you think? Is it enough to solve your problem? Yeah? Every time got anger, go and sit. Relax, silent, then peaceful again. Then come out. See the symbol, get angry again. Or similar situation, fear arise again. That's why you go to retreat, in and out of retreat, enjoy the peace, the calmness. What for? Don't have the wisdom to root out all this greed, hatred, and delusion, and fear. Go back to society, square one, no change. That's why the Buddha never stopped there. He said there is a fourth way. Read. Oh, just now didn't off. No wonder.
So the fourth way. Trace the origination factors of the unwholesome thought and then retrospectively reverse it by the cultivation of mindfulness of Dhamma. That is, by cultivating the mindfulness of the six internal and six external sense bases. This is to develop the wisdom to free.
Yes, very good. Thank you. So the fourth way is the real wisdom way. So this fourth way, I read to you again. You have to trace the origination factor. Origination factor means what? What is the cause of the arising of that anger which was never there before that? How did you get angry? How did fear enter your mind state? You have to trace it. How to trace? Silent, like Dhammanupassana. First category, mindfulness of the five mental hindrance, like sloth and torpor. I silent, then it disappears. Then I continue to develop mindfulness throughout the day. Then when I'm mindful, the moment anger arises, this awareness is aware. You can follow. Yeah? If you have the mindfulness, you will be aware there. Then you can trace. How did I get angry? It must be because you saw somebody. Then the thought through memory recall and you reacted where you perceive him with negativity. This is the wrong thought, the condition, the arising of the evil roots of anger. Sometimes fear is the same. If it's something that you don't understand, you got doubt or put pending danger and all those things. Then there is fear, understand? Intense fear sometimes. Especially the first noble truth reality of disease. When the doctor say, hey, you could have this, very likely you have cancer. Immediately you panic. Then he say, you have to do a biopsy to confirm it. I tell you, during that week when you wait for the result, you go and try out. That intense fear, that worry, the anxiety, the attachment. Here you think this body is you. Then what happened? The Buddha said, trace the origination factor. After you trace already, you know it's from one of your senses. Most of the time it's either through your thought that project and create a fear. Or when you see somebody that you have negative perception or you don't like. Or you hear something, somebody scold you, abuse you and all this thing. That's why you get angry. You get affected. And this is the origination factor. And this is also Dhammanupassana. To trace the origination factor, you have to meditate on mindfulness of the six internal sense bases and six external sense bases. The sense data, the sense bases, upon contact. The awareness is aware of all this. And when you trace the origination factor, you know how this thing come. The Buddha said, using this understanding, retrospectively reverse it. Then the unwholesome thought will be gone. So easy, eh? How do you reverse it retrospectively? That's why you have to meditate, reflect, contemplate. Through mindfulness you understand. Because this is your habitual tendency, your wrong view. You perceive them with negativity. You have fear, you have doubt, because you don't understand all these things. That's why your thought project and create the fear. What happens if the biosis come out positive? What am I going to do? It's not a reality, but your thought creates such intense fear in you, worry, anxiety. Then you heard people say, wow, chemotherapy, terrible. Mental agony. And the worst is, it hurt your pocket. Understand? They say it's very expensive to do chemotherapy. Then you worry you may lose your job. Then you are a lady, you worry your hair will drop. Understand? After chemo, you heard of all this. Then you have this very quick idea. I better check with my friend who got a very nice wig. I buy them ready first. So all this is thought projection, not a reality. But the intense fear, worry, anxiety already set in. So when you understand that this is not a reality, this is a wrong view, what must you do? What must you do? You must straighten your view. No, you meditate already, you found out all these things, you trace the origination factor, you knew why you reacted and become like that. But this is your wrong view, understand? So you have to straighten your view. That's why straightening your view after listening to the true Dhamma is a meritorious action. And this is part of the essential Dhamma, cultivation. So you have to develop this other. Then inquire, how can I straighten my view? How can I not react the next time when I have this thought projection, when I see this guy, or when I heard abusive speech about me, or backbiting and all that? How? Yeah? You have to learn to? I already told you, straighten the view means how do you straighten your view? The question is now, no more answer, straighten your view. That was the earlier answer I gave. My question is, how do you straighten your view based on this understanding? How? If everything also you wait for me to give you the answer, you will never learn. Understand? If I know this is wrong view, I have to abandon this way of living life. Then what did the Buddha say? You meditate to see things as they are. Ah, from here you should get the answer. Right? How to see things as they are? Yeah? You have to learn to see things as they are. And this is very powerful, no? That's why this is the direct seeing. The Buddha called it Jnana Dasana. The direct vision leading to the awakening. Direct knowledge and vision of the truth, of the reality. See things as they are means what? You don't see things according to the wrong view and your wrong perception. Your conditioning, your belief system. Because this already creates the wrong thought, the fear, the anger, the emotion, the reaction. That's why all these people cannot free, even after going to retreat, after retreat, or meditation, or listening to Dhamma. But they don't understand this. So how do you see things as they are? Based the truth and the reality. Take the first example, anger. Very easy. Why did that guy scold you or create such anger in you? Yeah? It's because you can't accept him, is it? Your thought tells you a lot of funny things, is it? But if I accept him for what he is, means I see him as he is, can I be at peace? Cannot. You say, he is my enemy, you know, how can I be at peace? But people answer yes. Oh. How do they see? Because you have to understand, people are just the way they are. Like the Buddha said, deluded people do deluded things. Selfish people do selfish things. Angry people, violent people do violent things. That's why they scold you, they abuse you. And they do all this. So if I can accept them for what they are, and with the Dhamma understanding, I will have love and compassion. I pity them. Because of ignorance, delusion, selfishness. They trap themselves in that mind state. And this is coming. This is coming negativity. They will suffer. They will be. Not only you don't have dislike or hatred against him, no. You turn around and have love and compassion. And you have pity over him. Then you wish him well-being and happiness. Forgive him, for he knows not what he is doing. Just like Jesus, those who crucified him, he said, forgive them, for they know not what they do. That's why I say Jesus got wisdom, if he can say that. Understand? When people harm you, about to kill you, you can also forgive them. Because it's due to their ignorance. If they don't have ignorance, they won't act that way. They won't do things that way. So to learn to see things as they are is to accept them for what they are. They are just the way they are. The thing you have to understand is deluded people do deluded things. Angry people do angry things. Violent people do violent things. Selfish people do selfish things. They are just the way they are. You can't change them. The moment you accept them, then you are at peace. Understand? Then your mind no longer stir, react. This is the real wisdom. Then you don't have to run to the corner and meditate. Understand? Or radiate metta. Understand? Or go and think all direct opposite. Oh, yo. So at that moment, you have the wisdom. Yoniso manasikara. That's at the moment of sense experience. Feeling become pure feeling. Then love, compassion arise. No more evil. This is what meditation is all about. So very simple, isn't it? But to do it, you have to meditate and develop that understanding. That's why I said you have to silence your mind and feel. And see how that anger, that fear, that emotion disappear. Then you realize they are what the Buddha mentioned. Dependent originating, condition arising. It's not me. They are the byproduct of the true nature. They are the gas of the mind. They are not intrinsic within your mind. That's why this is not your true mind. The aggregates are impermanent, non-self, empty. This is how you penetrate. And this is what meditation is. This is real vipassana. Insight into the universal characteristic through meditation, through silent awareness, mindfulness. Okay? So the fifth one, read. The fifth one is the best.
The fifth one. If all the above four ways also cannot help you, then you must use your own self-determination as recommended by the Buddha, that is, with clenched teeth and with your tongue towards your palate, you should determine strongly to abandon the negative thought.
You understand the meaning? The Buddha also give out on you. After teaching you these four important ways, also you cannot do it. He said, "Jige chop sang." So then he said, the best way is with clenched teeth, ngao chi nga kan, understand? Tongue above the palate, abandon it. You have to ngao chi nga kan and fong. You understand Cantonese? Means no matter how painful, you have to abandon it. Understand? It's because you refuse to learn what the Buddha has taught you. So the fifth way is actually to me, is to tell you to wake up. Understand? So if you understand this, you will know how to meditate. And you will progress very well. So all this sharing is very, very useful, very important. Okay? Any question so far? No question. We move on. Yeah? Page 29. What is meditation? So that we understand what we are doing in the name of meditation. And this will keep us always in focus. So bear this in mind when you meditate. Find out, is that what you are doing? Means you understood what is meditation. Until now, do you understand what is meditation? Yeah? What is the meditation as taught by the Buddha? So, to meditate, what did the Buddha say? You must have? What must you have to meditate? Did I really teach you? Before he died, he repeat. Strive on with heedfulness. To meditate is to train your mind to have this quality of heedfulness. Then you will be ever mindful and constantly meditative. So what is meditation? Meditation is to be heedful, to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, or the meditation as taught by the Buddha. If you are not doing this, you are not meditating, I tell you. And to train your mind to be mindful is the first step. After that, stabilize it to be ever mindful. But if your spiritual faculty is there, no need to do all this. Because sati is there, samadhi is there. That's why with the spiritual faculty, you are in the meditative state. The moment you sit, you are still, silent, peaceful. Then in the midst of light also, you are the same. Because the spiritual faculty are with you. And once the wisdom dawn upon you, this form of mind will never forget or lose it. Because wisdom is an awakened understanding that is always with that nature connected to the form of mind. Okay? So this part, remember, so that you understand what you are doing in the name of meditation, so that you stay focused. If it's not the handful of leaf, forget about it. If it lead you astray, forget about it. The next one. There are two steps involved in the development of meditation as taught by the Buddha. It's written here. No need to remember. First step is what? Read it out aloud, I think. Everybody must read it out. Otherwise, it never go in. Wait. Not synchronized. Together, follow me. Together. First step is to train the mind to be heedful. We are using a skillful mean or an object of meditation to anchor the mind in awareness or mindfulness, so that the mind is relaxed, aware, silent, and mindful within. So easy. Then number two, step two is what? To make use of this trained mind in silent awareness to see things as they are. Again, like what I explained just now. To develop the meditation as taught by the Buddha, namely the cultivation of daily mindfulness or sati sampajana, the four foundations of mindfulness, the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths, and the Noble Eightfold Path. If you do all this, you will complete the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. But all the other earlier mentioned are all within the Noble Eightfold Path. The Noble Eightfold Path will have the four foundations of mindfulness. The four foundations of mindfulness will have daily mindfulness and sati sampajana. Then the Noble Eightfold Path also, towards the end, Dhammanupassana, mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths, will also have the three turning of the Four Noble Truths. That's why everything is in the Noble Eightfold Path. Okay? Then the aim of meditation is to realize the state of enlightenment that is beyond thought, beyond time. Means mental time, psychological time. Because the Dhamma is timeless or akalikal in Pali. Thought-based meditation is limited to the field of thought. Hence, it cannot free our mind or lead it to realize a state that is beyond thought and beyond time. Because the moment of thought is psychological time. You know what is psychological time? Physical time we cannot stop. Psychological time means the moment you start your thought process, then there is mental time. That is what we call psychological time. Jai Krishnamurti also called it psychological time. The truth, the enlightenment, is timeless, unconditioned. When there is no thought, no movement, no psychological time, that is the Dhamma. That is the timeless Dhamma, akaliko. So now you understand why thought-based meditation is limited to the field of thought. Then it will not awaken you. Where the instrument itself, how can thought realize a state of enlightenment that is beyond thought? Possible. If your microscope can magnify 10 times, you want to see the, what they call, very, very minute organism. Possible. Or you want to magnify 1,000 times to see what is going on in the atoms, or in metal and all those things. So when your microscope, if the magnification is only 10 times, you are limited by the instrument. You cannot see beyond 10. So if it's thought, you will be within the field of thought. You cannot realize something that is beyond thought, beyond mind. So the problem with a lot of Buddhist practitioners is, over the years, how the Dhamma has fallen. They use thought to approach the Buddhist meditation. So what they do? They use thought to study the sutta, the commentary. Then, what do they do after they study? Yeah? They come out with what? They come out with method, technique to do the meditation. They interpret all this. All this come from what? Thought, isn't it? Then, they want to follow this method and technique and instruction to meditate. Then after that, what do? They use thought to meditate, you understand? And they hope to realize an enlightenment that is beyond thought, beyond mind. How can the method, technique, teaching, and all this commentary that comes from thought allow you to develop the awakening that is beyond thought, beyond mind? Unless it's written by somebody who has awakened, like Hui Ning and all those things, then it's different. But then when you meditate, you cannot use thought. You use thought, even Hui Ning's teaching will not help you. You understand? Even the Sakyamuni Buddha's teaching also won't help you. That the instrument is wrong. He asks you to be mindful. You're still using the thought to note and verbalize. You know what is verbalizer? Verbalizing. Eh? Chattering. Verbalizing, not so different from chattering. Yeah? Because you don't verbalize, yeah? You cannot understand. So you verbalize pain, pain, pain. Yeah? Intending to walk, intending to walk. Sound, sound, sound. You might as well go and note, heedless, heedless, heedless. Lost in thought, lost in thought, lost in thought. To remind yourself that you are heedless and you are lost in thought. Then be heedful, understand? Pain, pain, pain is to remind you of the pain. It's the trigger of the five mental hindrances. One of them. What are you doing? You are doing the opposite of what the Buddha teaches. The Buddha says when the mental hindrance of pain has arisen, means ill will, you have to be aware. You are totally not aware. You go and note and create more pain, more hindrance. That's why it's completely opposite. And very difficult to penetrate if you do that. Okay? Can follow? Yeah? Oh, no response on that. How? Yes, very good. The next one is very important. Eh? Diligently cultivate the five spiritual faculty of Saddha, Viryasati, Samadhi, and Panya to overcome the five mental hindrances of sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, or sleepiness, or lethargic mind, and restlessness of mind and doubt. So this one we had done, eh? The five spiritual faculty. Once you have the five spiritual faculty, the five mental hindrances will cease to be. Then the danger of having self-delusion and not comprehending what Sakkaya Ditti or self-delusion is. You must make sure you wake up to this. The danger of self-delusion leading to heedlessness, leading to karmic downfall, leading to all your affliction, suffering. Important of using mindfulness to observe and understand how your mind stirs or get conditioned into mental thinking or mental activity leading to all the emotion and reaction to sense experience that condition one's suffering. We are comprehending the famous Mahayana saying. This one is very good. How many don't know Mandarin here? You also don't know Mandarin? Very difficult to teach you. Qi xing dong nian. You understand what is that? When you arise a thought, you create movement of thought. Understand? You create thinking. The English translation also cannot understand. The moment you arise a thought, qi xing is arising a thought, you move the thinking. Understand? Qi xing dong nian. It's a very beautiful description. You know Mandarin. But English, like, doesn't sound wrong. The impact is not there. Qi xing dong nian. Whenever you stir your mind and arise a thought, thinking activity arise. That's why you become heedless, lost in thought. So this one is very useful. Qi xing dong nian. The arising of mind creates thinking
hand stirring the mind comes to be. Or in the Theravada term is avijja paccaya sankhara. So Theravada teaching easier to understand, or Mahayana. Both also same, no? Ignorant, dependent on ignorant conditioned thinking, mental activity. Qi xing tong nian is easier to understand. Isn't it? I think Hui Rong sure agree, from Taiwan, Chinese educator. So ignorant condition, mental activity, or activity of mind. The first two link of paticca samuppada. That's why you think a lot. My teacher Ajayantra always say, the difference between you and the enlightened one is, you think a lot, is it? You think a lot. Why? Because you're ignorant, deluded, is it? When you don't understand what you do, the teacher say, go back and think about it. That's why you keep on thinking. And you think and think and think, all this is knowledge. Then after that you say, I know. Then Krishnamurti come out, you are the most dangerous person in this world. Because there is nothing to know. All knowing comes from thought, memory, which is knowledge. What is there to know? You're supposed to awaken to and realize all this, not to know it as knowledge. Knowledge cannot help you. You cannot act according to knowledge. You can act according to wisdom, understanding. Can follow? Huh? You realize a lot of this has been taught before, but repeated again, but in a different way, in a different manner. Okay, then number 8. Originally, before the sitting, the mind is already in a meditative state of peace, silent, and still awareness within. So the stirring of mind only comes about when we do not have the wisdom and the understanding of this fundamental principle of the original mind or the true mind. Then through our own delusion or ignorance, we cause our mundane mind to arise. Hence the stirring via our reaction to sense experience. Caused by what? Caused by wrong view. At every moment of sense door consciousness. Training the mind to have the silent inner awareness and clarity to see all this clearly. That is meditation. Then there is no more delusion. Thereby understanding that if we can let things be, then there is no more suffering or problem. And with this understanding, tranquility, stillness of mind will return by not trying to do anything. So meditation is simple or not? Don't do anything. Silent. Away. Okay. Then we read on. And with this understanding, tranquility will return by not trying to do anything. We are using the thought to suppress and control, etc. Now you understand? If you don't do anything, you know what you do? The problem with all the meditator and cultivator, I'm not meditating. Because they want to meditate. So who meditate? The thought want to actively meditate. That's why this thought, we are using the thought. This thought try to do what? Suppress the hindrance. Control the hindrance. Do away with anger. This is how they contradict themselves. The problem is not with the hindrance. It's with your lack of spiritual faculty. And this one the Buddha has made known. And yet they didn't learn. Because it was not taught. That is, just be patient to maintain the silent mind with clear inner awareness. And let everything return to its original state before it's stirring. Always remember, when there is no delusion or ignorance, then there is no stirring of mind. Hence, having the understanding that only wisdom liberates or frees the mind. There is the moment you have wisdom, your mind will not stir, and you are free. So no need to do anything after that, because things are just the way they are. Suchness. Ta-ta-ta. Very simple, isn't it? Very easy to comprehend. But the doing of it, the training, the awakening to it, is the difficult part. But if you are sharp, if you have that attentiveness, and listen attentively and just do accordingly, you will awaken, you will realize. And when that happens, you will tell people the same thing. Just like with the song I read earlier. It was all the way, all the while like that. Truth is everywhere. Why can't you see? Those who see, they always see. Ayo, where got such thing on? No, it's okay, you can ask, but there is no such thing, understand? I already told you that form and mind is not me, understand? How can you have feeling? Understand? Means you have thought, you are creating. It's just that form and mind come here, connect to the wisdom, you know what to do, that's it, finish. He don't go, wow, enlightened, I can enjoy life, huh? I can go here, I can go there, I can do what I like. It's not like that. Enlightenment is to awaken to the truth. That to understand that this form and mind is not you, karmically conditioned. But this one, follow law of karma. That's why there is a duty that you have to do towards nature's law of karma. That's why this form and mind cannot simply do things, understand not? But this form of mind is beautiful because no more suffering, no more deluded by the phenomenal world.
What happened to your previous karma?
You see, this is all your thought telling you, understand? These are not the handful of leaves. You keep on like that, not won't stop. Then until cow come home, we won't end, understand? Because these are not the handful of leaves. Forget about it. It's not a joke, understand? If you heedlessly do that, it will become a habitual tendency. Dhamma is not joking, understand? Please, because this will lead to heedlessness. Then you think it's a joke. It's not a joke. Understand? So all this thought is what your mundane mind is capable of creating idea. And you listen to it without wisdom, you will say, oh, very interesting. I want to know what an enlightened one looks like. Joseph Goldstein has a very good answer for you. They ask him, how is it like to be enlightened? How do we recognize enlightenment? He said the enlightened one don't have a chop here and tell you he's enlightened. The only way to find out is observe him. Does he have fear, greed, anger, selfishness, delusion? That is the only way you can find out. And that one is the form of mind. It's not him. Understand? You look at all the arahants on the wall, nine here, nine there. That the bronze statue inside there. All the 18, very weird character. If you look at the form, how can this be an arahant? Then, like Wen Su, Bodhisattva Manjusri, he come as a beggar. This beggar is a Bodhisattva. Then you miss out. Understand? You cannot look at the outward appearance, the form. But you have to look at how he act, how he live his life, how he express himself. If he has the Dhamma, he will have the embodiment of Noble Eightfold Path. If the Noble Eightfold Path is not there, no matter what type of enlightenment, it's not what the Buddha has taught. It's not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So that is the only way for you to find out, understand? So don't be curious and allow your thought to take you around. I hope you understand. I'm not stopping you from asking, but please, we don't have much time, luxury of time. So we have to limit it to the handful of leaves that can help you develop the meditation and the understanding. Okay? Then we go on. Tata means suchness. Tas in Sanskrit. The Buddhist thing, this refers to what is called reality as it is, yatta bhutanam. This reality is also referred to as suchness or tasness. And tatata in Pali, indicating what is or the isness of things. A Buddha or an Arahant is defined as someone who knows and sees things as they are, or see reality as it is. Yatta bhutanam jnana dasana. That's a direct knowledge and vision of the reality. Then, gate means gone. It's the past. Passive participle, huh? Of the verbal root. What is this? Gam. Go travel. Agata. Come. Oh, he's trying to explain tathagata. It's the past passive participle of the verb, meaning come, arrive. Thus, in the interpretation, tathagata means literally either the one who has gone to suchness or the one who has arrived at suchness. An easier understanding is the Buddha is called a tathagata. The tathagata is a being that is expert in tatata, suchness. Yeah. Then we move on. 2.1. The Bodhisattva, through reliance on prajna paramita, is unimpeded in his mind. Because there is no impediment, he is not afraid. And he leaves distorted dream thinking far behind, ultimately nirvana. Here, distorted dream thinking means delusion, condition, inverted thinking. That is, taking the unreal to be real and vice versa. So this verse is so beautiful. Yeah? Distorted dream thinking. The Mahayana way of discussion is very good. Huh? In Mandarin, it's called tian tao. Understand? Inverted thinking. Means you tabali on. All Buddhas of the three periods of time attain anuttaya samyat sambohi through reliance on prajna paramita. Therefore, know that prajna paramita is a great spiritual mantra, a great bright mantra, a supreme mantra, an unequal mantra. It can remove all suffering. It is genuine and not false. That is why the mantra of prajna paramita was spoken. Recite it like this: gate gate paragate parasam gate bohiswaha. Here, prajna paramita means the perfection of wisdom cultivation, and anuttara samyat sambohi means the perfection of Buddhahood. This is even more beautiful. All these are describing the Heart Sutta. Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form and all those things we have gone through. The verse appear like very contradictory to normally taught Dhamma. Hence, the beauty and uniqueness of the Heart Sutta. Reason why it was always expressed as true emptiness is wonderful existence. That is when one is able to understand the profound true emptiness as taught in the Heart Sutta, then existence or life becomes wonderful and very meaningful and beautiful. Hence there is no contradiction, because on the one side is taught the conditioned Dhamma within the conditioned world. Then there is the realization of the unconditioned Dhamma, which is the understanding of true emptiness as taught by the Heart Sutta. The unconditioned Dhamma, as explained by the Buddha, is beyond thought, beyond mind. Hence, no word, no concept, no idea. And know this and know that. Pardon my English. Know this, know that. Not a standard English, is it? Which implies cannot be spoken or expressed like the great Tao. See? The teachings are similar, except worded differently. Then the last part is meditation. Bratio conducted a review of the compound email notes as written by him to various Buddhist group and Dhamma friends in early years with the title Understanding the Meditation as Taught by the Buddha. This is the email compilation that I read to you early on. So as to enable cultivator of the Buddha Dhamma to have a better understanding of the key or important Dhammas as constantly emphasized by the Buddha. They are, so again, this one we have gone through, the Dhammapada verse. The next one, important of understanding the true significance of the Four Noble Truths as expressed by the Buddha as equivalent to the handful of Liha. This one also covered already. So if you don't focus, stay focused on the handful of Liha, you will deviate. Otherwise, the chances of deviation are very high and probable. Then the importance of understanding what is meditation. This has been stressed many times. And it's also explained under email number 2 and 3. You go and read it. The importance of developing the three types of corresponding wisdom, also described inside there. Sutta Maya Panya, Cinta Maya Panya, and Bhavana Maya Panya. that will arise. We are cultivating the three turnings of the four noble truth as taught by the Buddha. We are his first servant, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. So you read email number 4, you will understand. Okay, next page. Question 1. You read the question. I don't want to read. You asked me this one during the early day too many times. Huh? Read out. Got such demon. You know what? The early day, the Karamita, they will come and report to you. No? Yeah. But you, I follow what you say. No? I do like that. Like that. Then I experience this. No? Then the next question, what must I do? You understand? No? Means he want me to spoon feed him. No? This one is Dhamma. You have to investigate yourself, find out yourself. You can ask questions. Nobody is stopping you. But don't make it into a habit. Understand? No? Every time you do that, it shows what? You are not serious. You go and try and find out first. Make mistake. And then come and report like Sandra and a few other Karyamita. And then I can guide you where you go wrong. Gladdy and all those people. Do you understand? You don't go and like Brother Theo is very easy to approach. You know? Anything, Brother Theo, what must I do? Can teach me how to meditate. You might say, ask me, can make me enlightened? Understand? Then you may think of what? Try to bribe Brother Theo. How to bribe? Wow, everything attend to him. There is no such thing, understand? Cannot. Because it's you, nothing to do with others and me. If you are not serious, you cannot find a way. Serious means what? You will investigate yourself. You try to develop understanding. Cannot understand, then the moment you understand, you cultivate, you move very fast. That's what serious cultivator do. And I realize that is the only way. If you are not serious, you don't have the virya. You know what is virya? Spiritual zeal to go this way. Very difficult for you to develop the real sati. And before the real sati come, a lot of your question is irrelevant. And I used to, in the early day, I cut short the question, you know how I answer. You go and meditate. Don't try to know. When the time come, when you awaken, all your questions will be answered by your own self, through your own understanding. Because before you can understand, you ask all this, which is not a handful of this, you cannot. So this is a very open question here. Can you teach me how to meditate? You know where it go wrong or not? He don't even want to know what is meditation. Understand? You understand? Huh? If you want to learn how to meditate, you must understand what is meditation, isn't it? Like you come to me, you say, hey, brother, I got a problem. Can you help me to solve my problem? You don't even want to know what your problem is. No? You understand? Huh? You don't even know your problem, you think I'm Samasambuddha or God. Huh? That's why if you want to learn meditation, you must understand what is. So the right question is, you must ask me what is meditation. I have answered. So you can read up and try it out. That is the way. Anyway, I answer this guy. I think it's a guy. This is the most common question, but also the most common mistake, because it is a wrong question to ask. You understand? When you ask this question, you expect the teacher or instructor to give you a method and a technique to meditate. Correct or not? True or not? Then what are you doing? And this sounds very logical, isn't it? Without method, without technique, I cannot meditate, isn't it? But what is the method? If I agreed with you and teach you and give you all the method and technique, I'm equally gullible, understand? You understand? This is not a joking matter. That's why I always say you must meditate with understanding. Because method and technique is not the meditation. It is only a series of instructions to do certain things. Like training the mind to be mindful, to be heedful, so that it's in the moment, silent, peaceful, and aware within. and to train the mind to develop samadhi, etc. And more often than not, the method or technique taught never defines the meditation. So isn't it more important to understand what is meditation? Only then do we know how to develop it. You don't even want to know what it is and you want to develop it. Yeah. So whatever that appears logical may not necessarily be the truth or right question to ask. Then note, unless you understand what is meditation, you will not be able to develop it. All method and technique are only an initial skillful means to help train the mind to be heedful or in samadhi. They are only a series of instructions given to initially train the mind so that it is not heedlessly lost in thought or preoccupied with what it is thinking or feeling. The purpose of meditation is to train the mind to be heedful, then to use it to see things as they are, to develop the wisdom, and to understand how the five mental hindrances can hinder your mind from returning to its original state of silent inner awareness and peace before it's stirring. So do not fight the mental hindrance or force it to go away, but instead just develop the corresponding five spiritual faculties of mind, especially sati and samadhi, as taught by the Buddha, to arise the wisdom to counter them. For the Dhamma is beyond thought, beyond time. Heedfulness is without thought, hence without psychological time. Bharatiya always advises us to diligently cultivate the five spiritual faculties because they are key to the development of the 37 factors of enlightenment. They appear twice within the 37 factors of enlightenment. So this one is very useful, very important. So the five spiritual faculties appear twice in the 37 factors of enlightenment is because after you have cultivated it and perfected it until it becomes unshakable, then they give it another name. They call it balas, the five unshakable spiritual faculties. That's the emphasis the Buddha put on the five spiritual faculties. Question 2. What about those who believe in chanting? Can chanting itself bring about enlightenment? At least this is a more useful question. Yes, it can, provided you know how to chant with very strong faith, clear mindfulness and understanding. Then it can also bring about the cultivation of the five spiritual faculties, sadha, virya, sati, samadhi and panya, leading to enlightenment. So don't be rigid or dogmatic to simply comment when you still cannot understand other people's practice or cultivation, especially those of the Mahayana and the Pure Land tradition. Their Buddhas and their great Bodhisattva vows are very powerful, and they can help those who are sincere to connect to their vows, enabling them to develop their cultivation so much faster. Whatever you do in life, and if you don't know, if you know how to develop it with understanding, then it can bring about a transformation too. For life itself is the meditation. We are the cultivation of the daily mindfulness, which is the cultivation of sati sampajana. Which is the cultivation of sati sampajana, daily mindfulness. Some important truth that Brother Teo has learned from his teacher Ajayantra, Prajayantra Amarabhikkhu, who is a very wise and famous Thai monk during the early years of his cultivation, from 1988 to 1992. I have affinity with this monk, very close. He always instructed us. This one you have to reflect, contemplate. But it helped me so much. I don't know whether it can help you or not. Mind is mind. Body is body. Body is never the mind. And the mind is never the body. But body is important too, because both body and mind must harmonize to help us live life and develop the meditation. And we choose to care mind because mind is more important. Does it impact on you? The moment I heard this, I know how to meditate. And because of him, I break through pain. I was at another 3-day, 2-night retreat. I don't know whether it was 8 precept or what. I think it's 8 precept. I remember his breakthrough Mahavira. So after he shared this with us, wow, I had a lot of joy inside. Yeah, body is body, mind is mind. Body never the mind. Then what happened was I meditated on the third day. Wow, the pain become like very intense, no? Very difficult to endure. Then that time, don't understand. So what I did was, I tell myself, since I have faith in Acharyantra, my teacher, I'm going to reflect on it. Body is just a body. Mind is mind. So I had this understanding. My mind is different from the body. So I say, I dare not put the vow like the Buddha underneath the Bodhi tree before he meditated. He said, not until my skin and sinus dry out, I will not rise off that seat. My vow is less. I said, I determined to sit through it. I say, the leg paralyzed, also paralyzed. Oh. I make this type of determination. Because I trust my teacher. I say, body is just a body. Mind is mind. Body never the mind. So you know what I did? I just silent everything, relax, and endure it. Didn't arise any mental hindrance, just endure it. Until it reached a point, it was so painful. You know? And you know the thought, cunning thought, come out through the back door. And you know what he said? You really want to paralyze your leg? Inside there, very loud message. Because of the faith and the determination. Inside there, just say, whatever will be, will be. Paralyzed, also paralyzed. Relax. And at that moment, you know what happened? Because I maintained silent, I didn't react to it. I endure. I just have faith that body is a body, not me. Mind is mind. Suddenly, during that time, it just flashes through. But this time is more intense than the pain one. The pain one flash through is not so intense. This one very fast, like lightning. No sound, of course, inside there. Then all of a sudden, the mind bright. Very bright. Spontaneous. Like that. Then this mind suddenly become fully aware. Fully aware. Clarity everywhere. Then it was so amazing. Inside there, it even have this like very amazed type of understanding. How can meditation be like that? The pain, the sensation was so severe. And I was enduring it. And just because I never worry about it, never think about it, never do anything about it, I just let things be as silent. Then this thing happened. Then when it happened, I want to find out. What happened to the pain? How come completely gone? Then there is this brightness of energy, the virya, the sati, the clarity is so intense, so clear. Then it is like so different, so brave. You can go down and check. Then I check at the lake here where I cross, where there is tremendous pain. All of a sudden, the mind is the mind. The body is the body. And this is the first, the real first jnana. Nama rupa paricheda jnana. Able to discern clearly between form and mind. Mind is mind, body is body. Exactly like what my teacher said. Then I realized that thing that triggered all the pain, that sensation thing, there is nothing inside there, no name, nothing. But you can see through the awareness, the pulling sensation and all those things. Of course, it's no word, I understand now. That thing that is happening is no sound, of course. A lot of things inside there happening. And I can see it. In the body, it's like that. Then I realize, because didn't relax. Then the moment it understand, relax, soup, flash through, no more. Then after that, from that day onward, until now, 1986 until now, I never have problem with pain. I can just sit. But now old already. Because I recently sprained this part of my ankle. I don't know when I sprained it also. Then I suddenly realized, when I sit, I cannot sit long. It's not because of the pain. I can endure, but no point becoming a hero. Understand? That's why I asked for this chair. Thank you so much. Kaya Mita funded this chair. Thank you. So, we should thank Pamasuri. She went and buy it and deliver it up here. So, all this understanding will come to you when you know how to meditate. That's why the mind is not what you think. So this is the teaching that I learned from my teacher, Ajayendra, and it helped me so much. Then he said, mind more important, because mind is a forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. All karma come from mind. That's why you have to train the mind to be heedful, determined to be heedful. The wise intent on heedfulness. That is the reason why. That's why he also knows, he said, we choose to care mind. Your mind is most important or more important. Then we choose to accept everything as natural because only form and mind and mighty nature rolling by, not so real and not one thing. Well, this one is the most powerful. The moment I heard about it, like great awakening, like this is what I have understood before. You understand what it means or not? We choose to accept everything as natural. Yeah? Everything arises and passes away based on nature's law, isn't it? Condition arising based on nature's law, isn't it? So if we choose to accept everything as natural, means no question. We can come to term with the reality, acceptance. See things as they are. Accept whatever situation as they are. People are just the way they are. The world is the world. They are just the way they are. It has to be this way. The condition like that, things will be like that. So if you can accept everything as natural, means you really have wisdom. Otherwise, you want things your way, you will suffer. You will react. You will stir your mind. Then, the reason is because only form and mind, like Brother Chia come to know, no reality at all, empty. And only mighty nature rolling by. Following nature's law, understand? Oh, and I like this word, mighty nature rolling by. Yeah? Just continue. So, not so real. And not what you think. Where the thought cannot understand, cannot perceive, is beyond thought, beyond mind. Then we choose contemplate all Dhamma until they are very, very clear. Importance of the second turning wisdom. Second turning of the fourth noble. He reminded me not less than 6 times every time I meet him in person. And I meet him only, I think once a year only. Sometimes twice a year, where I go and visit him. I took my children to his temple, to Kanchanapuri, and they liked my two children a lot. He liked my two children a lot. He gave them Pali name. And because of him, I learned so much. And my nature rejoices because these are words of great wisdom. Then all this have actually helped me a lot, the second turning. When he reminded me no less than 6 times, later on after I came to understand the Dhamma, then I realized I have been doing this second turning contemplation and reflection all this while without knowing that it is the second turning. Until I read about it when I came out to share, when Yun Chan asked me to come out to share. Then I said, because after a few sessions, they want to learn Dhamma. Then I said, can. So they asked me for the topic. Then I saw in the Vipassana Center, there was a poster where the Buddha spoke the first sermon, the Dhammacakkappavattana, with the 5 ascetics. Then I said, this sutta, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. I haven't read the English translation of that. I don't know what the sutta, but I know the Buddha started with this. So I said, I also start with it. Then after that, I asked Yun Chan, you got any book on the English translation? Oh, she very good. I said, got relative. I give you the chanting book, the Thai chanting book. Then I saw the three turning there. Then I straight away understood what that three turning is, and I linked it to the three type of wisdom, because in the sutta, it's never mentioned, the three type of wisdom. Then after that, I came to realize what I had been doing was the second turning. That's why I progressed very fast. And through the second turning, the understanding was pretty deep, because from the past, then I don't need the third turning to really awaken. But later on, different. Yeah? The third turning all happened. Yeah? Then this nature is very different. Yeah? Then the fourth one is the best. the highest and real meditation. We choose aware of all action and all movement in the present moment. And this is daily mindfulness in daily life. It is from this cultivation, after he mentioned within 2 weeks, the daily mindfulness came. I reversed my whole cultivation from anapanasati absorption out into daily mindfulness. That's how it happened. Yeah. Then the fifth one, importance of having a good daily religious routine to train the mind to cultivate puja, metta, and meditate every day. That's why I say start with morning before you when you wake up, then at night before you sleep, then in between afternoon, lunch break or what you have time, meditate. Then after that, connect the interval between with daily mindfulness. Then you have a very good religious routine. Then you can be heedful in the midst of life. And this is how, based on that, I started. I determined that time, morning, before I sleep. Then in between, when off it. Then later on, everything I do, every moment, I extend it from the house to the car, then from the car to the office, from the office back into my home, into daily activity. And it can be done. You become more efficient because you have clarity. And you don't need memory. Not to say you totally don't need memory. You don't need to hold on to the memory to remember things. When there's condition, it will arise. It's never lost. It's there. Then with the wisdom and knowledge, it knows what to do. It knows how to act. It knows how to manifest. It knows how to share. Okay, the last one is importance of constantly cultivating the five spiritual faculties of mind and the keeping of the five precepts. So this is emphasized again. Yeah? Make sure you understand all this. It will benefit you a lot. Yeah? If you are serious about cultivating, I just learned all these things from him only. Then I know how to cultivate on my own. He didn't explain to me, you know, like the way I explained to you. I just catch it, you know. There was no real recording and all those things. He didn't have a whiteboard to write down. I just listen and this nature understand. Then he can come out with all the words. He's still around. You can go and ask him. He never used whiteboard to write. He just speak and share. Then of course we try to record. But a lot of the tapes, then most of it is when I listen again, then it went in deep. So all this is possible even during that time. So now with the website, everything with Jin Hao, Sui Han, they are all the committee members doing such fabulous work, making it so much easier and more efficient for you to access all this, you should be able to benefit much more. Then with the Kayamita's funding of the transcript book, all, you can have them. That's how you count your good blessing. Yeah, and you should rejoice. And this is what you receive. In future, it's your turn to give. Then you should give and benefit others. Yeah. They do all this, it will benefit their nature too. Where in future, when they come, people will do for them, just like you all, receiving all this. Where in the past, maybe, I don't know, some of you could have done this work before. So that's why now you got people who do all this work for you. So don't be selfish. When you have goodness, kindness, your nature becomes beautiful. That is what law of karma is all about. Okay, we go on. 1.4. The key to understanding meditation is to understand that the body and the mind must harmonize and be in a state of constant, relaxed inner awareness. All the words I bore are very important. To develop the meditation, and because the mind is trapped inside this physical body of ours due to our karmic conditioning. So whatever the body experiences, the mind will also experience them via the mental consciousness. This is the reason why the form and mind can experience suffering conditioned by one's karma if wisdom is not developed as yet. So, like I explained, the consciousness trapped inside. This is nature's way through law of karma to create the form and mind so that you can go through and be afflicted by all this, what they call friction of your karma or karma vipaka. Whatever you do, it can come and afflict you, cause suffering in you, because your consciousness is trapped inside. And this is nature's way of testing you and putting you through samsara. That's why without wisdom you cannot liberate, you cannot free, you cannot understand. So this partner, every word that is bold is very important. You must make sure you understand. This is the reason why the form and mind can experience suffering conditioned by one's karma if wisdom is not yet developed. So now all with printed book and all those things, it should actually help you a lot. To truly become enlightened, one must have the understanding to transcend birth and death of the segmented life of ours. You understand what is segmented life, huh? Yeah? What is the segmented life? This segment of your life means this form of mind that come in this life. That is your segmented life. Like my segmented life, this life is Brother Teo. And this is my nature segmented life that come to this world. Yeah. So you also have one. To come to this world, you will have one. Yeah. It's the only difference whether you have to come and others choose to come. That is the only difference. You have to come means you got no choice. Karma condition you. You are born of your karma. Head to your karma. Conditions by karma. You are what you are before. So you got no choice. You have to come. You cannot say, no, I don't want to come. You tell the law of karma, please, let me rest for a while. Cannot, because of delusion, ignorance. Then to truly become enlightened, this part is very important. The famous quote by Master Quang Ching Lao He Sang, he is a very good monk, and what he said is very true. Guo qi xing bu ke de. This one is in Mandarin. Those who know Mandarin, they will benefit. The past is already gone, so it's no more reality. Wei lai xing bu ke de. The future has yet to come, so it's also not a reality. Then finally, it says, xian zai xing ye bu ke de. The present moment also cannot be hold on to, because it is also not a reality. Then the other part is, the present moment cannot. The English not so good, huh? Cannot also be held onto, hence not a reality too, even though it's the highest in life and within existence. Highest in life or within existence. Because the moment you know or experience it, it is already gone. Hence, no longer the present moment. Because we have gone through that. When you want to understand life, you have to ask yourself, what is life? To go through life is to go through existence. Can follow? And what is existence? To exist is to go through time. Can follow? Yeah? So time, we can define that. The three period of time is what? Past, present, and future. So, as stated there, the whole spectrum of time can be understood. Past, present, and future. Of these three, which is a reality? That's why everybody knows that the present moment. The past is already gone. That's why it's no more reality. You cannot change. Future, something yet to come. Haven't happened yet. Also not a reality. So the only reality in life is what? Present moment. But how stable is the present moment? The moment I talk about it is gone. So split second is gone. Even though it's the highest in life. That's why you heard a lot of this teaching, present moment mindfulness, awareness, Eckhart Tolle, power of now and all those things. So present moment is the only reality in life, the highest in existence. But that is still within life, within the field of thought. So if you want to transcend life, what must you do? You must transcend even the present moment, understand not? And that is what enlightenment is all about. That's why it's beyond thought, beyond mind. beyond even the present moment. You understand? Then the other thing you have to ask is, this is the only reality in life. Moment to moment, life passes by. This is the only reality. What are you doing in life? Every moment, what are you doing? What are you doing? You existed for so long, isn't it? Thinking, working, so? Planning, so? Worrying. So, I always say, human being, very funny, you know, they are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life, so much so, they never have the time to live life. Understand? We every year do a lot of planning, is it? Next year KPI also have to do already. So you can plan. Nobody say you cannot plan, but plan with mindfulness, awareness. Plan within the moment. Understand not? Don't worry about things. Don't get excited. Live life. This is the moment. This is the reality. All the other thing that the thought tell you is an idea, not a reality. The thought will say, hey, you better plan. Otherwise, next year KPI, how? You will get into trouble. So you listen to your thought. But more important is this moment, what are you doing? Are you peaceful, aware of the moment, with clarity, planning, doing? Or are you worrying? When you have a mind state that has worry, it's restless. Understand? There is no clarity. That's why you cannot be efficient. Then that fear, that worry will trigger off a lot of what they call mental hindrance. That's why it makes you restless. Your mind cannot be peaceful. Then when you are in that state of confusion, you can never be efficient. It's like in a career field. If the boss suddenly throw the file at you, I want this by tomorrow. Oh, you open up, you panic. My God, is it crazy? By tomorrow, 1 week also cannot finish. Nobody to help me tomorrow. Then what you do? You scared, you lose your job. You panic. You got so much fear. Sweat. Cannot sleep. Then the next day, die. Sure die. Where you got to answer to that boss. So when you don't have the understanding and the wisdom, then you will be subject to all this stress, pressure, fear. That's why they say management by harassment and fear. They harass you. They know you cannot deliver. They have to find a reason to sack you. Or they want to make life difficult for you. Or they want to teach you a lesson. But there are a lot of bosses who are not so kind, not what you think. So in life, it's exactly the same. So if you don't have the Dhamma, you will worry about it. You will project your thought. And this one is not a reality yet. All the fear, worry, anxiety. The reality is, tomorrow you have to deliver. Understand? That is the instruction. And what I will advise you is forget about what he said. Do the best you can. When you do the best you can, he cannot fault you, isn't it? You have tried. If you got problem, constraint, you go and tell him all. He said, I don't have the ability to do within 1 day. I need more time. I need more people. If he tell you all and ask you to leave, then you say, no, I'm not going to leave. Because I'm qualified when you appointed me. Understand? Qualified means what? When you write in for the job. You submit your CV, isn't it? Then they put you on probation, isn't it? They test you out there. The moment they confirm you means you are qualified. Understand? They cannot force you to do things beyond what you are been hired for. So if it's beyond you or beyond your capacity, you just tell him, it's beyond me. And he cannot just sack you. Of course, you don't want to enter into confrontation. That's why I take care of karma. I never have this problem before. I never harass people. I never do all this to people. That's why all my job, I'm very lucky. All my boss like me. Then all the company that hire me on fatat on, I tell you. Then the beauty about all this is my job. When I started, the furthest is Bangsa. I started, I work from Bangsa. Then come nearer and nearer to my house. Every time I change job, it's nearer, nearer, nearer. Until within less than 2 kilometers away. That's why you take care of karma, karma take care of you. Then all the job is very interesting. You don't have such bosses and all those things. The environment, the condition, all very, very conducive, very beautiful. So this is what law of karma is all about. You reap what you sow. If you treat people nicely, people will treat you nicely. If you simply abuse your power, do all these things, you will get into trouble. Okay? Wait, how much time do I have? Almost up already. Okay, I stop at 3:30 so that you can meditate. Okay, I finish off this part. The present moment also cannot be held onto, hence not a reality, even though it's the highest in life or within existence, because the moment you know or experience it, is already gone. Hence, no longer the present moment. So in order to transcend life or birth and death, in Mandarin it's called Liao Sen Si, one must transcend even the present moment, which is still within existence, the field of thought, and life itself. As we all know, the moment is the only apparent reality in life, and as real as it can be, it is only within the moment. And the very next moment it is dead and gone, and no more. And the next moment arise and pass away again and again. Hence impermanent, empty, and not so real, anatta. So moment to moment life passes by, what are you doing? The problem of living being is they are too busy thinking, planning, worrying and reacting to life most of the time. So much so they totally miss out on life. That is, they are never with a moment to fully live life and to experience all of the beauties and wonders of life. Instead, they only existed through life. They are conscious of life, but they are hardly aware or mindful of the moment. So learn to live life and not to worry about life. Yeah. So these are very simple, isn't it? Yeah? There is a song, Don't Worry, Be Happy. So not bad. So be happy. Why do you want to worry and make yourself miserable? But when things go wrong, first number through reality hit, check with the author of the song, see whether he worry or not. But it's a good song. When you are in a state of sorrow, lamentation, worry, you sing that song. Don't worry, be happy. Wow, at least you have some comfort. But without the Dhamma, that one is not a permanent cure. You will still have problems. But learn the Dhamma, then you can really be happy. And you will never worry. Understand? That's why there is so much benefit and advantage to cultivating Buddha Dhamma. Okay, we have to move a bit faster. Bertil just briefly went through it because it is not important. Oh, this one, you go back and read, Master Shen Hua, the 8 line verse. Oh, we're supposed to discuss next session, so I leave it. Okay, then meditation. While reviewing email number 3, what is meditation, part 2, Brother Teo came across the 6R. Here I got write down 6R, you don't have to copy. Here very clear, he teach you how to do. This one will help you. As mentioned by one of the participants, and Brother Teo had so kindly explained the 6R practices to us as below. You know why it's worded like that or not? We have Miss Teo, Miss Li Siwe, she wrote this short note. Understand? So she got to phrase it this way. So when I edit it, because it is she who wrote, so I have to give her credit. Understand? So I have to write it according to what he want, what he meant. The monk that introduced this 6R is quite a good monk, and his 6R method or technique, which he also sometimes termed as the right effort, is quite useful and good. if used as an initial skillful means to train and relax the mind. But as in many instances, they thought the 6 hours is the meditation, hence the problem. This is also the reason why every time when they are doing the 6 hours, they thought they are meditating. Anyway, the 6 hours are, as mentioned, consists of the following. So the first R is recognized. To recognize that your mind has been distracted by a distraction, which may be a pain, a wandering thought, or a tension, itchiness, or numbness within your body, manifesting as tactile consciousness, see, I explained earlier on, or at one or the other sense or consciousness. The second R is release. To release the mind from that distraction and let it be without clinging or reacting to it. Yeah. You understand, huh? Yeah. Then the third R is relax. To relax the tension and tightness or stress within caused by craving in your forehead. So this one, according to him, there is a tension there. There is a stress there. So you have to relax this tension at the forehead. Yeah. It's like our mind sweeping method. Relax. Feel. Any tension, any tightness, any stress within, relax. So he's relaxed is only at the forehead. That's why he said, your forehead where there is like a membrane that has been tightened. Then the fourth R is re-smile. This is to relax the body and mind of all tension and stress within. When you smile, you relax. Because in order to smile genuinely, there must be a relaxed state of joy and happiness. This one I add in one. Fifth R is to return to the Anapanasati. Mindfulness of the in and out breath. To train the mundane mind. To develop a stability of mindfulness leading to heedfulness. These are the last few words I add in on. To train the mundane mind, he never say. He just say return to Anapanasati. Then I add in all this. To develop a stable mindfulness leading to heedfulness. All this I add in. Then the sixth R is repeat. To repeat the above 6 hour training. Then my comment is, please note that the number 6 step involves a lot of repeated doing by the thought. So again, thought-based. Hence very mechanical and repetitive, leading to thought-based meditation. If one cling on to the doing without understanding what meditation is, so a better way will be to replace the 6 hour with meditation via the trained mind in silent awareness instead of repeat. So this one is very important. Replace the 6 hour with meditation via the trained mind in silent awareness. This will help improve and refine upon the 6 hour to make it a lot better and much more useful. Similarly, step 5 can be stopped once the mind is already trained. Note that step 3 and 4 are very similar to our mind sweeping method and metta used to train and relax our mind. So basically the 6 hour can be a very useful initial skillful means to train and relax the mind. So both can help you. It depends on which one you prefer. Have an open mind when people share with us their understanding. We should appreciate and have mutual respect for each other's understanding. No more trying to be right or arise any unnecessary argument that can lead to disharmony and misunderstanding. So avoid all division and negativity of mind. Pure action are action performed without any evil roots or evil motive. When you want to do good or generosity to get merits, and your action is out of getting merits or greed for merits, it is already not a pure action. And it will end up with no true merits. For true merit is born of pure action that are free of the three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. Okay, we stop here. The true merit one actually came from the emperor that was with Bodhidharma. You remember that China's emperor? He built a lot of temple and supported the monks, the translation, everything. Then one day, he managed to invite this Bodhidharma, the first patriarch that went over to China. So he thought this Bodhidharma will praise him because he has done a lot. So he invited Bodhidharma and talked to him. He said, Bodhidharma, I have done so much, built so much monastery, supported the Sangha, everything. How much do you think I have developed, merit-wise? He got a shock of his life when Bodhidharma tell him zero. What? He somehow dare not get angry with Bodhidharma. He is so famous and so honored by people. And I was like, then the king just inside not happy. After that, he refused to see him. Then Bodhidharma went back to Shaolin Temple, faced the wall for 9 years. Then later on, 9 years later, somebody, Zen master from China, very good one, the king invited him and told the Zen master the story. Then the Zen master told the king, Bodhidharma was right. You didn't understand him. The king panicked. Why do you say he's right? He said he's an enlightened being. What you do, although very meritorious in the mundane sense, but you do it because of the merits, understand now? So your action is not a pure action. You act out of greed for that merit, even though very subtle, very meritorious. Oh, then the king suddenly wake up. Then the king said, why did he tell me at that time? You know what the Zen master tell him? Even he had told you at that time, you won't listen. You are the king. Then after that he regret, he asked his general to invite him. Bodhidharma refused to come back. And the general also couldn't move him. They finally tie him up. Don't know how many horse try to pull. Bodhidharma cannot be moved. So this was the Zen story. So this particular true merits, you have to understand. When you cultivate until that understanding, no mark, then true merit will arise. And that is a very different one. Okay, we better end. You can meditate. Okay, good. You're supposed to have 1.5 hours, but I cut short. I give you 1 hour. So as to compensate for what we have taken away. So you have 1 hour of meditation.